Good morning and welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes. And the program is being paid for by Davidson Advertising and Alan Shoes. This is show number 43, and today is Saturday, February 27th, 2021.
And hello, my name's Alan McCloskey. My wife Annette and I own and operate Alan Shoes in Tucson.
And our guest today is James Thompson, who's a brand executive coach and an Amazon channel expert and author. He'll be with us a little later talking about ways to work with Amazon. So, Alan, that should be interesting.
Yeah, I've got some great questions for him that I've been thinking about, and I hope he can answer them. And, you know, show number 43 you announced, you know, it's almost a year since we started this. And we know that the effects of the pandemic will last a few more months, so we'll have to figure out how we can continue to help our listeners. Don't we need to do that, Rob?
Absolutely, Alan. I think this is going to last longer than a few more months, probably, so we're going to have plenty to talk about, I imagine.
So let's talk about what President Biden has recently announced that he's going to do to help the SBA's coronavirus relief programs. On Wednesday, February 24th, the SBA established a 14-day exclusive PPP loan application period for businesses and nonprofits with fewer than 20 employees. This will give lenders and community partners more time to work with the smallest businesses to submit their application while also ensuring that larger PPP-eligible businesses will still have plenty of time to apply for and receive support from before the program expires on March 31st, 2021. SBA also announced four additional changes to open the PPP to more underserved small businesses than ever before. While these changes are being implemented, SBA will work with community partners to improve the emergency relief digital front door and conduct extensive stakeholder outreach. And SBA will strengthen its relationship with lender partners to advance equity goals, deliver funding efficiently, prevent fraud, waste, and abuse, and they will also allow sole proprietors, independent contractors, and self-employed individuals to receive more financial support by revising the PPP's funding formula for these categories of applicants, eliminating an exclusionary restriction on PPP access for small business owners with prior non-fraud felony convictions, consistent with the bipartisan congressional proposal, eliminate PPP access restrictions on small business owners who have struggled to make student loan payments by eliminating student loan debt delinquency as a qualifier to participating in the PPP, and ensure access for non-citizen small business owners who are lawful U.S. residents by clarifying that they may use individual taxpayer identification numbers to apply for the PPP. So it's a critical goal for Congress for the latest round of PPP was to reach small and low moderate income businesses who have not received the needed funding to relief so that they can get a forgivable PPP loan. And so that's what's going on. I thought that was an important update. Rob, what about you?
It was, Alan. And, you know, last night the House passed President Biden's $1.9 trillion stimulus package, moving the legislation to the Senate for a vote where it will likely meet even more resistance. The Democratic-controlled House voted 219 to 212 to pass the American Rescue Plan. The package will now go to the Senate, where it requires 51 votes to pass the reconciliation. This legislation is transformative, lifting 12 million Americans out of poverty and generating $1.25 for every dollar spent, and a great source of pride for all of us because this legislation would cut child poverty in half, according to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. So these things are all in the works, Alan, and hopefully the help will get to where it needs to go.
You know, there was something with that the state of Arizona did recently. They're considering a bill, Rob, and I think you have some information on it, that would exempt some businesses from the Arizona education tax. And I think while that doesn't correspond to the article you just read, I thought that's an important thing that we should cover in this segment about Arizona, what the Arizona legislature is thinking of doing.
Yes, sure, Alan. A veteran lawmaker is proposing what amounts to an end run to allow some business owners to avoid paying the just-approved income tax surcharge for education. The proposal by Senator J.D. Mesnard, a Republican from Chandler, would create an entirely new alternate tax category for small businesses, generally those organized in a way so their income passes through to the owners. That means the owners would compute what they owe the state on their personal income tax forms after deducting all business expenses. What makes this significant is that Proposition 208 imposes a 3.5% surcharge on adjusted personal income of more than $250,000 for individuals and $500,000 for married couples filing jointly. That's on top of the current 4.5% rate that applies for income above those figures. SB 1783 would give business owners the option of instead paying a 4.5% tax on their adjusted business income. More to the point, the surcharge in Proposition 208 would not apply because this new tax category did not exist at the time voters approved the measure. So business owners could compute their tax liability using both the existing formula or the new one, and then choose the one that cost them less. Mesnard told Capital Media Services that creating this new category makes sense because it will allow lawmakers to craft special tax provisions targeted at helping small businesses. He acknowledged, though, that a prime reason was to help business owners escape paying that new voter-approved surcharge. We heard that time and time again, this will not or is not meant to impact small business, he said, and so what this is doing is ensuring that's the case. So that's what's going on. Obviously, the Democrats are not happy about it, Alan, but, you know, things go back and forth. Hopefully, they'll have a compromise and it'll work out.
You know, this is one of the reasons we're never going to get to a flat tax, because there's always going to be somebody that wants to create an exception. It will happen like the minute after if we ever did have a flat tax, don't you think, Rob?
Absolutely. Everybody's got their own agendas, and this is the way it goes. So it's going to be hard to come up with consensus, but hopefully they will. And in the meantime, it seems like our legislature is busy doing things that they should probably not be doing right now, but that's conversation for another day.
Well, we have a lot of articles to read and updates to give to our listeners. I want you to look into, Rob, since I'm not in the studio today and I'm calling in, I want you to look into our engineer's eyes and ask him if we could take 2 hours today instead of an hour.
Can we take 2 hours? Okay, John, he gave us a thumbs up, Alan, so... We could probably do that, but I don't think the station management would be happy about that. But you know something, Alan?
I don't think so.
You know, something that's interesting, you know, part of the $1.9 trillion aid package is they're trying to put through a $15 minimum wage. And Costco is boosting its minimum wage to $16 starting next week. The warehouse retailer's chief executive said that during a congressional testimony this past week. The $1 an hour wage increase exceeds the pay the competitors Target, Walmart, and other big box retailers offer their employees, and comes amid a national discussion about raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Earlier this month, Walmart said it would raise the average pay for 425,000 of its employees to $15 an hour, while still maintaining its starting wage of $11. This isn't altruism, Costco CEO Craig Jelinek told the U.S. Senate Budget Committee on Thursday. In the long run, by minimizing turnover, maximizing employee productivity, commitment, and loyalty, we encourage our employees to view Costco as providing a career rather than just a job. Jelinek said half of Costco's 180,000 employees in the U.S. are paid at the top of the company's hourly pay scale in excess of $25 an hour, and most of these employees, he added, receive regular twice-yearly bonuses of up to $4,000 each. The hourly wage for employees including these bonuses comes to about $24 an hour, he said. The Biden administration has proposed raising the federal minimum wage to $15 an hour from $7.25 an hour. During the pandemic, Costco had added an extra $2 an hour in so-called hazard pay to frontline workers' checks, but that will end this year as the company adds a permanent pay increase, according to their CEO. So companies are doing a lot of this on their own, Alan. You know, it's supply and demand in a lot of cases with employees. So I think it's very interesting to see what happens with this $15 an hour minimum wage.
So that wasn't in what they passed last night, is what you're saying?
Well, I think it was in what the House passed, but now the Senate has to pass it, and I believe the Senate will probably be extricating that from the bill at some point. I think the president's willing to do that just to get the $1.9 trillion through. So we'll see what happens. But I think
it's going to be really hard for them to get that passed if it's separated from that bill. But
we'll see what happens. You know. We'll see what happens. You know, minimum wage is always an interesting concept, and we'll just see how it plays out. Like I said earlier, you know, supply and demand has a lot to do with wages, and I know many of my clients are having a very difficult time finding good employees, and they'll pay just about anything they can to find them. So at some point, $15 may not matter either.
Well, but in these other states, so it's more for these other states, because we've already increased the minimum wage in Arizona, but in these other states, it's as low as 7.25, and
it's pretty low.
That's pretty low, and I know there's a cost of living difference in some of these states, but it's not that much lower. So they got to do something. Maybe they can compromise and just, you know, raise it in lower amounts for those states, like 50 cents a year rather than $1.50 at once, and then another $1.25. And I don't know. At a certain point, inflation takes over, and you're going to have to do something for some of these people, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, and if you're living on $8 an hour or something, you're not living very well. We know that for sure. So it's not a situation anybody wants to be in.
Well, let's take a break now and move on to the next segment after our commercial break. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. If you know of a long-term Tucson business that should be highlighted by us, Rob would love to hear from you, a suggestion of someone we might bring on our show. So please come back after our commercial break.
For over 37 years, Allen's Shoes has become the place to find quality comfort footwear, great customer service, and the best selection of sizes and widths. Allen's Shoes carries men's and women's shoes from brands such as New Balance, Brooks, Hoka, Birkenstock, Clarks, Echo, Taos, Finn, Mephisto, Piccolinos, Wolke, Propay, and many others. We think we're the best place to buy shoes in Tucson. Our selection of wide widths is the best in the area. A big selection of the best brands, coupled with service from an energetic staff and a vast inventory of sizes and widths, is the Allen Shoes promise. Our new store hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Allen Shoes offers the comfort you want and the service you deserve. Visit us at one of our Tucson stores or online at allenshoes.com.
So much more than just windows and doors. Tucson Window and Door.
You've seen the rest. Now see the best at Tucson Window and Door. Right now, you'll save during our biggest sale ever. Save 15% on your entire purchase, plus an additional $100 on every window and door. Tucson Window and Door is locally owned and operated. You'll never get over the top prices by aggressive salespeople who won't leave your home. We'll always treat you fairly and with respect. Check out our numerous testimonials and positive reviews. For the best products at the best prices, specially engineered for Tucson's harsh elements, remember Tucson Window and Door. Financing options are available OAC. Remember, save 15% plus an additional $100 on every window and door during our biggest sale ever at Tucson Window and Door. Go to TucsonWindowAndDoor.com to schedule your free estimate today. That's TucsonWindowAndDoor.com or call 298-DOOR, 298-DOOR, ROC number 206959.
So much more than just windows and doors, Tucson Window and Door.
Need a plumber? Call Al Coronado Plumbing. Featuring our 5-crown service. We charge by the job, not the hour. There are never any unpleasant surprises. As everyone knows, emergencies happen at the worst time. That's why we answer our phones 24/7. And at Al Coronado Plumbing, there's never an overtime charge. You pay the same regardless of when we do the work.
Al Coronado Plumbing, the name you come to trust. Our 5-pound service keeps things running.
Our work is guaranteed up to 5 years. Call 323-7848.
Al Coronado Plumbing. Our 5-pound service keeps things running.
Call 323-7848. ROC number 289733.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner of Allen Shoes.
Our guest today is James Thompson, brand executive coach, Amazon channel expert, author, B2B distribution specialist, and keynote speaker. James is a partner at Buy Box Experts, a managed services agency supporting brands selling online. Earlier, he served as the business head of Amazon Services, the division of Amazon responsible for recruiting tens of thousands of sellers annually to the Amazon marketplace. He also served as the first fulfillment by Amazon account manager. Prior to Amazon, James was a management consultant and banker. In 2015, James co-founded the Prosper Show, a continuing education conference for large Amazon resellers, and in 2017 published the book, The Amazon Marketplace Dilemma, designed for brand executives seeking to optimize their distribution strategy on the Amazon Marketplace. In 2020, James co-authored the book, Controlling Your Brand in the Age of Amazon, The Brand Executive's Playbook for Winning Online, with Wendy Gibson of Voris eControl. This book is designed for brand executives struggling to turn the Amazon channel into a positive component of their brand's overall growth strategy. James holds a Bachelor of Science from the University of Alberta, an MBA from Vanderbilt University, and a PhD in marketing from Northwestern University. He has guest lectured at more than a dozen business schools, including Stanford, Northwestern, University of Michigan, and Dartmouth. James has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Wired, Forbes, Washington Post, Consumer Reports, Entrepreneur, Inc., Business Insider, CNBC, Bloomberg, and CBC. James resides with his wife, Anne, and his three young sons in the Seattle area. James, welcome to Back to Business. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. That was quite the introduction. Thank you.
Yes. Well, you've got quite a resume. So, James, maybe you could talk to us a moment about what life is going to be like with Amazon with Jeff Bezos leaving from his position.
I've been asked this question a number of times in the last 2 weeks, and I actually think very little is going to change. You have to understand that Amazon has always been focused on the long term, thinking about where does the business go, not in next year, but in 5 years, in 10 years. And so Jeff Bezos' approach of building an organization where people are focused on thinking long term, that's going to continue. The people who are still in charge of the company are very much long term. And by the way, Jeff is moving into the executive chairman role of the board. The board's role is to look at long term strategies. So Jeff is still very much going to have his fingers on where this company is ultimately going to go, but he's not going to have to worry about some of the day-to-day activities. So as a company, nothing much is going to change. As a consumer, I think you're still going to have the same type of experience. Amazon's going to keep growing. They're still going to focus on selection and low price and fast delivery. So I don't see a lot happening at this point.
Alan, you have a question for James.
I sure do. So, James, I run some shoe stores, and I'm also an Amazon 3P partner. And, you know, it seems to me that Amazon has been very gracious and has set up this relationship using some merchandise from retailers. And I was wondering if you saw that continuing, building, or shrinking, that particular relationship.
Quite frankly, Amazon's interested in having anybody and everybody who's got access to product to come onto the marketplace as a seller. The relationship that you have with Amazon is really not unique. And if somebody else comes along with selection that Amazon wants, they'll be happy to add them to the platform. And quite frankly, every one of your competitors, Amazon's already actively trying to recruit. When I used to run the Amazon Services Group, my job was to go out and find not just new selection, but competitors of the existing selection we had. That is to say, my job was to go and bring all of your competitors also onto the platform. Because with more competition, there's more opportunity for price competition. Price competition means lower prices. Consumers love lower prices, and that's what's good for Amazon long term.
Well, we participate in a lot of other shoe retailers, and I'm sure retailers of in other categories like clothing and jewelry, whatever, participate. And we either use Amazon warehouses, which allows us access to quick shipping and lower freight costs, and some people just sell out of and ship themselves. I do both, and it's helped retailers. I'm sure it's helped retailers to clear their inventory of some products that they couldn't sell to their normal traffic or quick enough to their normal traffic. And so there are advantages, but there's also disadvantages. And many retailers feel that they lose business each and every day to Amazon. Some have claimed they went out of business because they can't compete against the internet. And what do you say to those retailers?
I think there's a couple of main issues here at play, and they've played themselves out extensively during COVID. The first one is that for many of these retailers who have had to close or limit their hours during COVID, it's become rather apparent that many retailers actually don't collect a lot of customer information. They don't collect enough information to be able to reach out to consumers and say, hey, our stores are closed, but we can still serve you. Or we've got a website, and we've told you about the website, and now we want to drive you to the website. That kind of conversation needs to happen well before a COVID lockdown. And when you think about the power of the internet, all of those companies who are running marketplaces like Amazon, they know how to reach out to consumers, whether there's a storm happening in Texas, whether there's COVID locking down your store, whether there's some other shipping delay that's causing problems that prevents you from opening your store and having the same selection you normally have. With e-commerce, you can avoid all of that, but it requires the local retailer who has physical customers coming into physical stores to have communications with consumers and be in a position that they can continue that conversation long after the customer walks out of the store. So those kinds of issues have certainly surfaced in the last year, and for some of these retailers who have suffered hard times during this period, a lot of it comes back to their inability to be able to continue the conversation with consumers at a time when their stores can't otherwise be open. The other big issue at play here, and certainly, Alan, I suspect you see this with your business, many brands will require retailers to abide by certain pricing policies, and yet there are many companies who sell online who are not bound to those same pricing policies. And so it's often difficult for retailers to be the lowest price alternative online, especially on a marketplace like Amazon. And so you end up trying to compete, trying to get your share of attention, but there's always somebody out there online who's willing to take a lower price and sell the same product at a lower price to the online shopper.
But at some point,
we call those rogue sellers. And
there are lots and lots of them on Amazon, lots of them.
And how do the manufacturers, police this? I mean, if they've got a price they want to, they want to stand by the price, how do they police it when these rogue sellers are selling for less? How do these guys get the merchandise?
I wrote a book on this very topic. There are so many ways that brands, unfortunately, shoot themselves in the foot, where they don't really pay attention to who's ultimately getting their products. They may be liquidating inventory without realizing that it's ending up in the hands of people who will put it on Amazon. They may be selling products in one country and it's imported back into the U.S. at a lower price. There's a lot of creative ways that people can get their hands on product. And these rogue sellers, many of them are very sophisticated, have a lot of funding, and are in a position that they can move quickly and capitalize on basically sourcing mistakes that brands make all over the world. So this is an unfortunate consequence for retailers who are trying to compete fairly on an online channel like Amazon, but it's part of what happens here in the U.S.
So how can people compete fairly?
Go ahead.
Well, not sure how many details your audience wants, but the reality is it typically comes back to the brand having to manage its distribution very closely. And typically there are business solutions and there are legal solutions. And the most effective brands have the right kind of online policies in place, the right kind of pricing policies in place, and they don't then turn around and incent their sales team to sell a bunch of stuff at the end of the quarter when the numbers aren't as strong as they want. And so you've got to be in a position where the brand will actually have a consistent strategy around making sure that only certain people have access to their product. And if they do that and they police it effectively, then it's a lot easier to create consistent pricing across channels that makes it easier for retailers like yourself to be able to compete on a channel like Amazon.
We'd like to ask you to come back after our break. We're going to have to break for the news quickly, and we're hoping you can stay with us. And we want to ask you a few more questions, if you don't mind. So will you stay with us through the break?
Yes. Great. Looking forward to it, Robin. Okay. Alan.
Okay, we're going to have our news now, and we're going to have some commercial breaks, but catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. With us today is James Thompson, who is a brand executive coach, and we will ask him to come back and join us after our commercial break.
CBS News Special Report. President Biden just addressed the nation after the House passed his $1.9 trillion COVID-19 stimulus package early this morning, with two Democrats voting against it.
We're one step closer to vaccinating the nation. We are one step closer to putting $1,400 in the pockets of Americans. We're one step closer to extending unemployment benefits for millions of Americans who are shortly going to lose them.
Now the legislation heads to the Senate. CBS's Christina Ruffini explains what's in it.
The House bill includes $160 billion to help with vaccine distribution, $130 billion for schools, and $30 billion for rental assistance. The bill also includes $400 a week unemployment benefits and stimulus checks up to $1,400.
Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern told lawmakers during the debate,
"Let's act big, let's act bold, and let's crush this virus."
CBS News Special Report. I'm Allison Keyes.
For years now, you've heard me say, don't get steamed, call Steamy. But have you ever wondered why? Imagine this. You have a leak, overflow, or some sort of water intrusion into your home. It may have even caused mold to start growing. So you get on the internet and look for someone to fix it. You find some advertisements online that look promising, call around, and probably hire the first person that says they can get out right away. You wait for hours on end, and when the doorbell finally rings, you're greeted by a fast-talking salesman that is anything but professional. And then, you guessed it, you got steamed. By what I call the water damage wannabes, and they are well on their way to taking advantage of your bad situation. This is why the very best plumbers, realtors, roofers, and insurance agents only refer Steamy Concepts to their customers for mold and water damage restoration, period. Steamy Concepts works with all insurance carriers and will always come out for free 24 hours, 7 days a week to inspect your mold and water damage problems. Go to steamyconcepts.com to schedule us out right now.
ROC number 291-200.
Water is the essence of life. Doesn't your family deserve the best? Give your family the best with the drinking water system from WaterTech. Our systems will provide you and your family with clean, healthy water, up to 25 gallons per day. A soft water system from WaterTech will help protect your plumbing, fixtures, will eliminate hard water minerals, and make your dishes and glasses sparkle. Give your family the gift of water from WaterTech.
WaterTech.
Providing service after the sale.
Since 1967.
Got bugs, termites, bees, or rodents? Arizona Pest Control will hunt them down. Arizona Pest Control is your complete desert pest management specialist. Pests can't run or hide from Arizona Pest Control. They use only the latest and most technologically advanced methods of pest elimination available, which minimizes the effects on the environment. Let Arizona Pest Control get rid of your bad bugs, termites, bees, or rodents. Serving Tucson and Southern Arizona since 1947. Go to azpest.com to schedule your free evaluation today.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey. My wife and I own and operate Allen Shoes in Tucson. We continue with our guest, James Thompson, who is a brand executive coach and an Amazon channel expert and author. And we were talking about some of the things that independent retailers participate with Amazon on their marketplace. And James, yes, it is a struggle for retailers and independent business people to do enough business and to live through the pandemic, and they've certainly benefited through Amazon. And I'm wondering whether Amazon cares about the profitability or has any programs to help the profitability of those 3P partners who sometimes find themselves behind rogue sellers, as we were discussing, and sometimes find that it's less profitable and a lot of risk involved with being a 3P partner.
I actually had better news for you. Amazon, their decision to run a marketplace is one around offering the opportunity for basically anybody to sell on the platform. But the profits you make and the economics that you have running on this marketplace, that's your responsibility. And Amazon is now at a point where the marketplace is large enough, there's enough consumers shopping on the site, that if a seller should fail and no longer be able to sell profitably on the site, they will fall off and five more sellers will fill their place. And Amazon doesn't, they're not really in the business of looking after any individual seller. I've worked with sellers that sell over $100 million a year on Amazon, and they don't even have a human contact within Amazon. It's not a marketplace that's designed for there to be personal relationships and people helping you out. You have access to data. You have access to the customers. It's your job to figure out how to make it profitable for yourself.
James, we had a listener call in with a question for you, and he wanted to know how much influence China has on Amazon and the U.S. consumer.
It's a fantastic question. I left Amazon about 2013, and at that time, there was no China strategy. By mid-2015, Amazon had set up a full operation in China, recruiting manufacturers and helping manufacturers from China go direct to Amazon customers in the U.S. And at this point, more than half of all new sellers joining Amazon in the U.S. are actually Chinese manufacturers. So when you look at the impact of China and Chinese manufacturers, it is rather significant. And to understand why this is happening, if you go out and you recruit a manufacturer in China and you get that company to sell direct on Amazon in the U.S., you've cut out a bunch of middlemen, which should cut the prices and allow consumers to get products for a lower price. Amazon cares about lower prices. And so if they can go closer to the source and get the products at a cheaper price, that allows them to pass the savings on to consumers. At the same time, it makes it very difficult for retailers who, you know, by definition, a retailer is a middleman, and hence it's an extra mouth to feed. It makes it harder for the retailer to be in a position to compete head-to-head with a manufacturer. So, the long and the short is China has a major impact today, not just on Amazon in the U.S., but all of the Amazon marketplaces around the world.
So I guess the question is, how should businesses work with Amazon, or should they compete against Amazon?
Well, I look at Amazon and I say, understand it for what it is. You may be a retailer that has, you know, for example, 1,000 products in your store. Most of those products probably don't make sense to sell on Amazon unless you're willing to go low price. And quite frankly, you may not be able to operate at the low prices that you would need to sell in order to win the sale on Amazon. But when you look at your full catalog, Alan had talked about this at the beginning, there may be parts of your catalog that you use to help sell through old inventory or excess inventory that you have, and you're in a position that you can discount that product. Amazon's a great place because you've got 300 million customers looking for products. Where else are you going to access so many customers? But if you're looking to sell your hero products, your mainstream products that everybody else, every other retailer out there also has access to, it's going to be hard to get the sale without going to a place where you may not be making enough margin to warrant the sale. We also see a lot of retailers use Amazon as a place to try new things out. Is there some bundle of products that you wouldn't otherwise sell in your store that might make sense online? You want to test it out. Amazon is truly an amazing testing place where you can put a new product listing up, try it out for a couple weeks. If it doesn't work, no problem, take it down. If it does work, you can tweak it, you can refine it. You can do an awful lot of things that are harder to do in some types of physical retail settings. And so Amazon can be very exciting for retailers who are willing to be dynamic and fluid about what they sell, at what times of the year, at what prices, and so on. But you know, for many retailers, when you decide what you're going to carry in your store, you have a pretty good sense that I'm going to be carrying these brands, and I expect that I'm still going to be carrying these brands in 6 months. When you sell on Amazon, individual products that you sell today, you may not be selling them in a month from now, because some new competitor may have entered the marketplace and changed the competitive dynamics completely, making it unprofitable for you to sell that particular product. So you've got to be fluid, you've got to be mobile and agile to make Amazon work, and you've got to be willing to say, some of my favorite brands in my store, I can't sell them online because there are too many of these, I don't remember what the term is you use, but too many of these unauthorized sellers who are selling products at lower prices.
James, finally, let's talk about your latest book. Maybe you could talk about it for a moment and tell our listeners where they might be able to find it.
Well, guess what? There's a place called Amazon that sells books. And one of the really interesting things about Amazon in the last decade is they've made self-publishing a lot easier. And we have a very professional-looking book, and it's a professional book called Controlling Your Brand in the Age of Amazon. It's a book aimed at business owners, brand owners, to help them understand some of those challenges that we talked about earlier around how do you make sure that your brand is being represented by the types of retailers and sellers that you want. I wrote it with an attorney colleague of mine, combining the business strategy and the legal strategy needed it's a tough place these days to be in a world where online marketplaces create a lot of lower prices, but also it's a lot easier for consumers to see those lower prices. It used to be back in the day you had to go to the phone book and call around to see if people had products and at what prices they had them. You can now go click, 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 see exactly who's got what at what prices, and that transparency changes the dynamic completely for brands and for retailers. So we felt compelled to write a book about how retailers and brands can tackle these challenging issues.
And the name of the book is Controlling Your Brand in the Age of Amazon, the Brand Executive's Playbook for Winning Online. So, folks, check it out. You can get it at Amazon.com. James, we really appreciate your time today. A very, very interesting subject. Lots of moving parts to this.
Thank you for having me, Rob and Alan.
Take care and be well.
So let's move on to a segment that we call Good News, and we have an article we pulled up from online article, and we'd like to read that. So for children raised in the Jewish faith, a bar or bat mitzvah is a celebration of the symbolic passage into adulthood. While at age 13 we're not truly grown up, we can begin to see our place in the larger world. What Lindsay Sobel saw in the months leading up to her own bat mitzvah was that a life of privilege wasn't a blessing that everyone shared, and she was determined to do something about it as she became increasingly aware of the day-to-day hurdles homeless people living on the streets of Los Angeles faced. One thing Sobel saw again and again was how many people lack proper footwear. So she said, I noticed a lot of them were really awful living conditions. We're living in really awful living conditions, she says. No way any person should have to live like that. On top of that, I noticed a lot of them did not even have shoes on. She said in an interview with A Mighty Girl, that's the publication, and she says, at 12 years old, I was like, wow, people don't have shoes? It kind of put things into perspective for me. For her, Tikkun Olam, an act of repairing the world, central to the bat mitzvah ceremony, Sobel came up with the idea to launch Shoes for Souls, a charitable outreach program that collects and distributes shoes for Southern Californians in need. And this sounds a lot like Souls for Souls, a national charity, but this is Shoes for Souls. And part of the requirement for having a bat or bar mitzvah is that in some way you can give back to your community and give back to the world. So here is one good news story that we're sharing today, Rob.
And Alan, there's a lot of other good news stories out there, and we're going to try to share them each week and be positive, because there's lots of positive things going on in the world right now, and we really need to talk about those. And positive things are good for business, right, Alan?
I certainly think so. But we have another segment coming up right after our break, and we're excited to talk to you about some things we read in the news this week. But catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Please come back and join us after our commercial break.
For over 37 years, Allen Shoes has become the place to find quality comfort footwear, great customer service, and the best selection of sizes and widths. Allen Shoes carries men's and women's shoes from brands such as New Balance, Brooks, Hoka, Birkenstock, Clarks, Echo, Taos, Finn, Mephisto, Piccolinos, Wolke, Propre, and many others. We think we're the best place to buy shoes in Tucson. Our selection of wide widths is the best in the area. A big selection of the best brands, coupled with service from an energetic staff and a vast inventory of sizes and widths, is the Allen Shoes promise. Our new store hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Allen Shoes offers the comfort you want and the service you deserve. Visit us at one of our Tucson stores or online at allenshoes.com.
So much more than just windows and doors, Tucson Window and Door.
You've seen the rest. Now see the best at Tucson Window and Door. Right now, you'll save during our biggest sale ever. Save 15% on your entire purchase, plus an additional $100 on every window and door. Tucson Window and Door is locally owned and operated. You'll never get over the top prices by aggressive salespeople who won't leave your home. We'll always treat you fairly and with respect. Check out our numerous testimonials and positive reviews. For the best products at the best prices, specially engineered for Tucson's harsh elements, remember Tucson Window and Door. Financing options are available OAC. Remember, save 15% plus an additional $100 on every window and door during our biggest sale ever at Tucson Window and Door. Go to TucsonWindowAndDoor.com to schedule your free estimate today. That's TucsonWindowAndDoor.com or call 298-DOOR, 298-DOOR, ROC number 206959.
So much more than just windows and doors. Tucson Window and Door.
Got bugs, termites, bees, or rodents? Arizona Pest Control will hunt them down. Arizona Pest Control is your complete desert pest management specialist. Pests can't run or hide from Arizona Pest Control. They use only the latest and most technologically advanced methods of pest elimination available, which minimizes the effects on the environment. Let Arizona Pest Control get rid of your bad bugs, termites, bees, or rodents. Serving Tucson and Southern Arizona since 1947, go to azpest.com to schedule your free evaluation today.
Water is the essence of life. Doesn't your family deserve the best? Give your family the best with the drinking water system from WaterTech. Our systems will provide you and your family with clean, healthy water, up to 25 gallons per day. A soft water system from WaterTech will help protect your plumbing, fixtures, will eliminate hard water minerals, and make your dishes and glasses sparkle. Give your family the gift of water from WaterTech.
WaterTech.
Providing service after the sale.
Since 1967.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey, owner of Alan Shoes. In recent weeks, we have been using Segment 4 to cover a series we call What Were They Thinking? However, this week, all of the articles I found were political figures in those, and they created some head-scratching moments for both Rob and I. So I've congregated all these stories in a segment we'll just call Political Update. I think it's important for business owners to stay up to date on the political signals that might mean something that is related to their business. So here we go with Moderate Broadcasting Group's version of Political Update, and we have update number A. What do you have, Rob?
Well, Alan, the economy is down nearly 10 million jobs since last February. Prospects for a rapid recovery, while brighter, remain far from assured. And speaking against the tense backdrop on Tuesday, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, delivered a blunt message to lawmakers that the economic outlooks remain wildly uncertain and that the central bank must continue its extraordinary efforts to support the economy. It's a pledge Mr. Powell has made many times in the last 11 months, but it's also resonated through financial markets, which had begun to quiver as investors worried that a rapidly improving economy would prompt the Fed to pull back on its efforts to bolster growth. In testimony before the Senate Banking Committee, Mr. Powell declined to weigh in on the Biden administration's spending plans, but pushed back on the idea raised by multiple Republican senators that the economy is on the cusp of running too hot and sparking inflation. Economic recovery remains uneven and far from complete, and the path ahead is highly uncertain, said Mr. Powell. There is a long way to go. To bolster growth, the Fed plans to encourage lending and spending by holding interest rates near zero, where they have been since March, and by continuing to buy large quantities of bonds to keep money pumping through the financial system. Investors have grown concerned about the Fed might slow those bond purchases sooner rather than later if inflation begins to rise. And Alan, you know, this week some bond prices had gone up and the stock market reacted very badly the last couple of days. So these are definite concerns.
You know, and that's an example of an article that we need to pay attention to as business people. But then we have a lot of news that comes about, and you're going to read some of these articles and maybe summarize some of these articles that we're trying to find that valuable nugget of information we need to pay attention to. But it seems like some of these messages are just political clutter. What do you think about what McConnell's situation is? And he is Article B.
Well, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said yesterday he would absolutely support former President Donald Trump if he became the GOP presidential nominee in 2024, a notable commitment following his recent blistering critiques of the former president. While McConnell maintained that the 2024 presidential election cycle would be a wide-open race, he also said that he would support Trump if he captured the Republican nomination. The nominee of the party, absolutely, said McConnell. The Kentucky Republican's comments come just weeks after he delivered a pointed rebuke of Trump on the Senate floor for fomenting the deadly U.S. Capitol resurrection. So, Mr. McConnell is Mr. McConnell, Alan.
Yeah, but he gets to win on both sides here.
Yep.
He may or may not believe that Trump will be the nominee in 2024, and he has nothing to lose saying, if he's the nominee, I'll support him. So maybe he's just the most astute of the political players, but you have plenty that seem to be less than that astute. Let's talk about article update number C.
Well, it's tempting to laugh at ridiculous conspiracy theories. In fact, we should laugh at them, but we must also take them seriously when they move from the fringes into the mainstream and then, most disturbingly, into the halls of power. It would be okay, for example, to guffaw at Republican Senator Ron Johnson after he sat in the Senate on Tuesday during the first hearing investigating the January coup attempt by followers of then-President Donald Trump and offered an alternative reality about what occurred. The notion was so far from the plain truth that it would earn the senator a place in the political fantastics Hall of Fame. Johnson suggested, quoting from a discredited article in The Federalist, that the violent insurrection that left several dead and dozens injured was just a jovial, festive event that was manipulated by enemies of the former president. That is, instead of what it was, according to the FBI, police, and our own eyes and ears, a violent attack by supporters of a president who had just lost an election and had riled his backers with the big lie, the baseless claim that he and they had been robbed. That conspiracy theories exist and are spreading is not news, but hearing them uttered by a U.S. senator during an official congressional hearing marks a new low, one that demands we sit up and take notice.
Well, that kind of goes from the bad to the worse as we move on to Article D, which talks about Republican ties to extremist groups.
Yeah, and the video's title was posed as a question, but it left little doubt about where the men who filmed it stood. They called it the coming civil war, question mark. In its opening seconds, Jim Arroyo, who leads an Arizona chapter of Oath Keepers, a right-wing militia, declared that the conflict had already begun. To back up his claim, Mr. Arroyo cited Representative Paul Gosar of Arizona, one of the most far-right members of Congress. Mr. Gosar had paid a visit to the local Oath Keepers chapter a few years earlier. Mr. Arroyo had recounted that meeting, and when asked if the United States was headed for a civil war, the congressman's response to the group was just flat out, "We're in it. We just haven't started shooting at each other yet." Less than 2 months after the video was posted, members of the Oath Keepers were among those with links to extremist groups from around the country who took part in the January 6th attack on the Capitol, prompting new scrutiny of the links between members of Congress and an array of organizations and movements that espouse far-right beliefs.
Before we can understand that, or as part of understanding that, we probably need to understand another Arizona congressperson. Before we understand him, we need to understand what your update is about Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Well, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is facing sharp criticism after she posted an anti-transgender sign outside her office directly across the hall from another lawmaker who has a transgender child. The antagonizing move by Greene comes as House is expected to pass the Equality Act, a bill that would ban discrimination against LGBTQ Americans. That happened on Thursday, as a matter of fact. It also follows a string of incendiary statements and actions by the freshman Georgia congresswoman, who was removed from her committee assignments earlier this month after violent past comments were unearthed. Illinois Representative Marie Newman, whose daughter is transgender, posted a video on Twitter of her hanging the pink and blue transgender pride flag outside her office Wednesday afternoon, captioning that Greene tried to block the act because she believes prohibiting discrimination against trans Americans is disgusting, immoral, and evil, adding she thought we'd put up our transgender flag so she can look at it every time she opens the door with winking and transgender flag emojis. That evening, Greene retweeted Newman's post and added a video of her own, hanging a sign that reads, "There are two genders, male and female. Trust the science."
Well, they're putting the fault for her getting out of control at the feet of an Arizona congressperson. And why don't you read that story about Andy Biggs?
Well, this is a commentary from Lori Roberts of the Arizona Republic. The new face of the Republican Party may be Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, but look behind the curtain, Arizona. There you will find, wait for it, Representative Andy Biggs. I know you're thinking I'd say Representative Paul Gosar, but Biggs is fast developing into a member of the Kook Squad. Biggs, who heads the House Freedom Caucus, has spent the last year throwing in with the party's far right over the edge wing. When he wasn't railing against masks as a symbol of government tyranny, he was bemoaning a stolen election, even going so far as to vote against the certification of his own state's election results. He's been hailed by Stop the Steal organizer Ali Alexander as a hero of the movement, one of four congressmen, including Paul Gosar, naturally, who schemed up the January 6th rally, turned riot to put maximum pressure on Congress to bloat certification of Biden's win. Biggs has strenuously denied having any connection to Alexander, though he taped a message that Alexander played during his December 19th Stop the Steal rally in Phoenix. Now we learn that Biggs actually encouraged the Republican Party's second biggest headache, QAnon's Marjorie Taylor Greene, to run for Congress last year. Put another way, he apparently viewed Greene, a woman who sees Donald Trump as a messiah and Democrats as cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles who sex traffic children from the basement of a Washington, D.C. pizza parlor that has no basement, as a good fit for the United States House of Representatives. So, you can't make this stuff up, Alan.
Well, we're going to give one more little quick summary about Article G. And basically, if you can read a summary about that, Rob, that might tie some of this together.
Well, you know, the Arizona legislature is trying to do everything they can to overturn the election. In fact, they just yesterday, I think, a judge in Phoenix allowed Maricopa County to give them the records from the last election, the voting machines, and all the ballots. So they want to do everything they can to overturn the election. Unfortunately, they can't because it's all been certified and done. They've also tried to pass several bills that would limit people's opportunities to vote. And it would be nice if they would just do what they need to do to make business better, Alan. We want business to be good. If business is good, everyone's really, really, you know, going to be better off. Anyway, folks, thanks for being with us this week. Have a great week. Thanks to our guest, James. And Alan, you take care and be well.